You know, if you ever watch a video of one of those Rube Goldberg machines.
Oh, yeah, like the ones where a marble rolls down a track and hits a domino.
Right, exactly. Like
But
a bowling ball rolls down a ramp, it hits a seesaw, launches a work boot, and then kicks a bucket of water.
yeah, and then after like 3 minutes of complete chaos,
Yeah.
a tiny little hammer finally cracks an egg into a frying pan.
Right. It is completely mesmerizing to watch. But I mean, that exact same unnecessarily complex, terrifyingly inefficient machine. That is exactly what most businesses are building in your inbox right now.
Oh, absolutely. It's an absolute mess.
So whether you are a solo founder grinding it out, part of a lean agency team, or honestly just someone completely exhausted by your own unread messages, this deep dive is going to fundamentally change how you view digital communication.
I really think it will, yeah.
Because today we are investigating a genuinely radical idea from a brief titled The One Email Problem. And our mission for this deep dive is to see if the absolute holy grail of digital marketing, the massive automated email drip sequence, might actually be destroying our connection to our audience.
It's a massive paradigm shift. Because, I mean, if you look at the conventional wisdom over the last decade,
Yeah, the stuff every marketing guru preaches.
right, we have all been aggressively sold on the absolute necessity of these complex structures. You know, the onboarding flows, the 30-day nurture drips, the elaborate re-engagement
The
chains.
whole marketing automation apparatus.
Exactly. It's been positioned as the only serious way to communicate at scale. But in our rush to automate, we have started optimizing the machinery instead of the message itself.
Wow, optimizing the machinery instead of the message. That hits hard.
We obsess over the timing of step seven, when the reality is the reader checked out at step one.
Okay, let's unpack this because the logic behind these massive drip sequences always sounds so entirely reasonable when you're like sketching it out on a whiteboard.
Oh, it looks beautiful on a whiteboard.
Right. The assumption is usually this: we have a diverse audience, so we can't be too specific right away.
So we keep it vague.
Exactly. We'll just say something broad and generic up front to catch everyone's attention. Then, as the sequence goes on, email two, email three, email four, we will get more specific. We'll slowly nurture them. It's basically a strategy of wait for it.
Which is a beautiful theory that gets absolutely demolished by actual human behavior.
Really, like the data actually proves it doesn't work.
Completely. The source notes that industry benchmarks consistently show that email engagement does not hold steady while you slowly get to your point.
Ah, I see where this is going.
Yeah, it drops sharply, I mean
Yeah.
drastically, after the first one or two messages.
So treating an email sequence like that, it's kind of like going on a terrible generic first date, but assuming it's fine because you plan to finally show your real personality on date number six.
That is such a good way to put it.
But the other person has already blocked your number. You're never getting to date six.
Exactly. You are saving your best, most relevant material for an audience that has already walked out of the restaurant. You just assumed their attention was guaranteed because you had their contact information.
Which is such a dangerous assumption.
It really is. And the text actually synthesizes this perfectly. There's this key quote: "The sequence doesn't buy you more chances, it costs you the chance you already had."
It costs you the chance you already had. Wow, it's a cliff.
A total cliff.
Which means that elaborate seven-part sequence isn't a safety net, it's actually an illusion of control. So if a sprawling drip sequence isn't the answer because people tune out, then logic dictates that a single email must be the silver bullet.
Well, you would think so.
We just send one email.
Problem solved? Not quite, because a single email can easily fail, and, you know, usually does fail, for the exact same reason that a massive drip sequence fails.
Wait, really? How so?
Both approaches commonly fall into the trap of treating a mixed audience as if they are one single monolithic person.
Ah, the mixed audience trap. I think the brief talked about this.
Exactly. So imagine you are selling a B2B workflow software product, and you are sending out a promotional email. On your list, you have a solo founder, and you also have an operations manager at a mid-size agency.
Okay, two very different people.
Right. Now, they might have landed on your list by filling out the exact same sign-up form on your homepage, same front door. But their friction points, the literal things keeping them up at night, are worlds apart.
Yeah, that makes sense because the solo founder is probably worried about top-line growth, cash flow, and the fact that they're wearing like 20 different hats.
Yes, exactly. And the agency operations manager doesn't care about the company's top-line revenue in the same way.
Right, they just want their day-to-day to be easier.
Exactly. They're worried about standardizing workflows, reducing team errors, and honestly, not looking foolish when they report to their boss on Friday afternoon.
So if you send them the exact same generic email, it's just going to miss completely.
The message, the friction point you're trying to address, the entire call to action logic, it all just falls flat. It creates what the text calls signal friction.
Signal friction.
Yeah, you use generic product descriptions, and the reader opens the email, sees a list of features, but they don't see their specific problem being solved.
But wait, let me push back on this for a second. Because features are concrete, it's what the product actually does.
Sure, they're concrete.
If I built a software tool, it has a dashboard, it exports to PDF, it integrates with your calendar. Those are objective facts. Why is it a mistake to tell people exactly what they are buying?
What's fascinating here is how the human brain actually processes value.
Okay, I'm listening.
There's a crucial psychological reality at play here. The text asserts that readers process value emotionally before they process it rationally.
Emotionally before rationally.
Okay. Yes, your features are concrete, but nobody wakes up in a cold sweat wishing they had a PDF export function.
That's very true.
They wake up stressed because they have to spend 4 hours manually formatting a reporting deck for a hostile client meeting.
Okay, I get it now. The rational features only matter after the emotional hook has established relevance.
Exactly. An email that leads with what this solves for you specifically, the emotional relief, the time saved, the anxiety reduced, will consistently outperform an email that leads with a capability list.
That makes total sense.
The Brief cites a company called Dayclerk as a great example of this.
Mm.
They build their email copy out of something called audience simulation.
Audience simulation? That sounds like something out of a sci-fi movie. What does that actually look like in practice?
It means they don't start by looking at their own product. They do behavioral analysis first. They literally map out the 9-to-5 day of their specific target reader.
Oh, wow. So getting really granular.
Super granular. Let's take that agency operations manager. Dayclerk doesn't just write, "Our software saves you time." They map out that it's 4.45 p.m. on a Friday. This manager's boss needs the weekly utilization report. And this manager is frantically copy-pasting data from 3 conflicting spreadsheets.
Oh, the absolute moment of maximum stress.
Exactly. So the email copy is written directly to that exact moment.
Hmm.
It addresses that very specific panic. So the copy reflects specific friction points rather than generic language.
They remove the signal friction entirely because the reader doesn't have to translate a generic feature into their life. The email does it for them.
Precisely. Only then do they introduce the software as the bridge out of that panic.
But here is the massive roadblock with that.
What's that?
To do that incredibly deep audience simulation, to write to the solo founder's cash flow panic and the ops manager's spreadsheet panic, you have to segment your audience.
Yes, you do.
And if you're running a lean operation, doesn't effective segmentation require a massive enterprise-level audience, like thousands of people?
No, and that is actually one of the most pervasive, damaging myths in digital marketing. The source text completely debunks this.
Really? You don't need a huge list.
You really don't. We assume we need tens of thousands of subscribers before we could even begin to think about splitting our list. But the reality proves that you can have a list of just 400 people, and it can be meaningfully split.
400 people? I mean, that's literally a high school graduating class.
Exactly. Because the most crucial factor in segmentation isn't the size of the list. It's knowing the why behind the opt-in.
The why over the who.
Yes. Why do they give you their email address in the first place?
Mm.
The text contrasts 2 completely different scenarios to show this.
Okay, let's hear them.
Imagine subscriber A, who signs up because they wanted to claim a 20% off promotional offer on your pricing page. Now imagine subscriber B, who signed up after reading a deeply researched 3,000-word white paper you wrote about future industry trends.
Right. They are in totally different universes mentally.
They have completely different readiness postures. Subscriber A is transaction ready. They know what their problem is. They know what your tool does. They have their credit card out. They just wanted a discount.
And subscriber B?
Subscriber B is in research mode. They are problem aware, but they aren't solution aware yet. They are looking for authority for education.
So applying this directly to you, the listener, sitting there looking at your email platform, because of those completely different readiness postures, those 2 subscribers need entirely different things from you.
Entirely different things.
If you send a 5-part, highly educational sequence on the history of workflow optimization to the person who just wanted the discount code, you're going to infuriate them. They just want to buy.
Exactly.
But if you send a hard sell, buy now promotional blast to the person who just finished reading your white paper, you are going to come across as aggressive and cheap.
And you'll completely lose the trust you just built. This is why that 400-person list needs to be split.
Because the why dictates everything that follows.
Exactly. It dictates the tone, the subject line logic, the length of the body copy, and the fundamental call to action.
Okay, but here's the terrifying part about all of this.
Uh-oh. What is it?
Now that we have a highly specific emotional message for a small targeted group, how do we actually get them to look at it? You could do all of that simulation work, and it won't matter at all if the algorithm or their thumb decides it's trash before they even read the first line.
Ah, yes. The mechanics of the email itself, the front door is everything.
The subject line.
Yes. And this is where we see a massive reversal in how people traditionally approach email creation. Most people write subject lines and preview text as a total afterthought.
Oh, for sure. I've done it. You spend 3 hours writing the email and then 3 seconds slapping a subject line on it right before you hit send.
Exactly. But think about the physical reality of how we all use our phones. On mobile devices, the subject line and the preview text together are essentially the entire email.
That's a really good point.
It is the only thing evaluated before the reader hits open or archive. It is the thesis statement of your message.
So if writing them last is backwards, how should we be thinking about them?
My instinct is to just spend hours testing a clever, clickbaity headline. Just find a manipulative hook to get the open rate up. I mean, a lot of people do that, but that is the exact opposite of what actually builds trust.
Really? Why?
Because a clickbait headline creates an immediate disconnect between the promise of the subject line and the reality of the email. The subject line is actually the brief for the email.
The brief? What do you mean by that?
It should answer one single critical question. What is the one thing this specific reader needs to believe before they open this email?
Oh, wow. Okay.
You figure out the answer to that question. And that answer writes your subject line. You write the subject line as the promise, and the body of the email simply delivers on that exact promise.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting, though. Let's say you nailed the subject line. It's an honest, compelling thesis. They open it. What they see next is where another massive misconception lies. Because, you know, we are all visual creatures, right?
Sure.
So we assume a beautiful, heavily designed, multi-column HTML email with gorgeous headers is going to perform best. But the text points out that those heavily templated, image-heavy HTML emails are actually doing real damage, especially at the high end of email volume.
It seems incredibly counterintuitive, doesn't it?
Totally. We want things to look professional.
But those HTML templates suffer from steadily declining deliverability and engagement when you compare them to plain text or minimal formats.
And there is a deeply technical reason for this, isn't there? It's not just about aesthetics.
Right. It's about how the gatekeepers, like Gmail or Apple Mail, actually process the email you send. Their algorithms read the underlying code of the email itself.
So when the Gmail algorithm scans your incoming message and sees complex HTML tables, a massive header image, all that code,
it immediately categorizes that message as a bulk promotional blast. It trips the algorithmic wires.
So it skips the primary inbox entirely and gets buried in the promotions tab where it goes to die.
Precisely. Plain text avoids triggering those algorithmic tripwires, giving you vastly superior deliverability.
But it's not just technical, right?
No, beyond the mechanics, there is a profound psychological advantage. A multi-column HTML template immediately reads as marketing.
It signals to the brain that a corporation is trying to sell me something.
Exactly. But plain text reads as a person.
It looks like an email you would get from a colleague or a friend.
Yes. For small and medium businesses especially, matching how their audience actually communicates day to day is vastly more effective than trying to look like a massive corporate brand. It just removes a layer of artificiality.
It strips away that corporate marketing sheen and just leaves the human connection.
Exactly.
All right. But we need to take a step back here and be really honest for a second.
Okay, let's do it.
We've just spent this deep dive systematically stripping away all the fancy marketing toys. We've killed the massive automated sequences. We've thrown out the generic copy. We've even deleted the beautiful HTML templates. We're basically left with a plain text single email written for a highly specific segment.
This raises an important question.
Right. To ask the hard question on behalf of you, the listener, looking at your own business, is adopting this single email approach a genuinely smart strategic choice? Or is it just a resource constraint being dressed up as a philosophy?
Are we just calling it minimalism because we're understaffed?
Exactly. Are we just making excuses because we don't want to do the hard work of building out the complex stuff?
It's a vital reality check. And the source material outlines this as a genuine tension in the industry.
So what's the verdict?
Let's be clear. A properly built, highly sophisticated drip sequence, one that has meticulous segmentation branching out at every single step, can absolutely outperform a single send.
So the sequences do work.
They do. There are massive businesses that make a fortune operating that way. But we have to look at the mechanics of what it actually takes to maintain a high-performing sequence like that.
Right, because it's not a set-it-and-forget-it machine.
Not at all. It requires a dedicated operations person to manage the data infrastructure. It requires massive, ongoing copywriting bandwidth to write dozens of highly specific emails for every contingency.
Like writing a different email for the person who clicked a link in email 3 versus the person who didn't even open email 3.
Exactly. And crucially, it requires daily monitoring to ensure the sequences aren't breaking. The reality is that most solo founders, lean agencies, and SMBs simply lack those resources.
The operational bandwidth just isn't there.
It's not. So if you try to build a massive machine without the resources to maintain it, you end up sending 6 mediocre generic emails that actively annoy your list.
So for most lean teams, one genuinely good email will drive more actual revenue than 6 mediocre ones.
Exactly. Prioritizing quality over quantity isn't an excuse. It is a critical calculation about your own operational bandwidth. It's an active, unsettled debate, but a crucial one for the listener to consider.
So what does this all mean? How do you take everything we've just analyzed and actually apply it today?
Well, the core takeaway is pretty clear.
Yeah. Before you send your next campaign, before you even draft a subject line, identify the 2 or 3 distinct reasons people are on your list. Figure out their different readiness postures.
And then do the sharpness exercise. Sit down and write a completely different version of your email for each of those reasons. Address their specific hesitation and their desired outcome. Speak to their specific moment of maximum stress.
And here is the secret. Even if you ultimately decide you only have the bandwidth to send one single version to the whole list, just the sheer exercise of forcing yourself to write for a specific human being will make your copy infinitely sharper.
Oh, without a doubt. It will do more for your clarity than any subject line A/B test ever could.
It forces you to remember that there is an actual breathing person on the other end of the screen.
Not just a data point.
Right. And that idea, remembering the human on the other end, brings us to one final, slightly provocative thought I want to leave you to mull over.
Okay, let's hear it.
We talked heavily today about how plain text emails work so well because they read like a person. If highly targeted plain text single emails are the ultimate way to simulate genuine one-on-one human connection in a digital space.
Yeah.
What happens when artificial intelligence becomes perfectly capable of writing and deploying these emotional, hyper-specific, plain text messages at scale?
Oh, wow.
When the human touch becomes the absolute easiest metric to fake, how will you know if a real person ever wrote to you at all?
That completely redefines what authenticity will even mean in the inbox.
It really does. It turns out that giant Rube Goldberg machine of marketing automation might be disappearing, but the machine replacing it is going to look exactly like you. Until next time, keep diving deep.